Welcome to my Crazy Life Caroline's podcast. It's been a crazy week, lads, I have to say. I was up in Dublin at an event, and just such a surreal experience that I was invited. I suppose being a bit older and being in a room where I was the oldest, it's a bit weird, but, you know, it's just, you can do it too. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're older and you think, oh, no, I can't do TikTok and Instagram, you can. Anybody can do it, lads. I'm so grateful to be invited. I had such a surreal experience going up in the car, actually. So I'd listened to The Power a lot, and I'd listened to books in my car. So I listened to The Power on the way up. It's part of The Secret, like. And it was saying, you know, that when people pass away, that they don't actually die. Their spirits stay around. And I just told my mother. And my mother and me, you know, I used to ring her to all her appointments. And we used to sit beside each other. And I just looked over and I just really felt she was there with me. When I was driving up, obviously I was feeling really nervous, and I do get nervous. Like, I know I don't portray that in my Instagram and TikTok, but of course I do. It's my first big event to go to, and it was just, you know, but I just really felt she was there holding my hand. So yeah, that was a mental, absolutely mental day. Then the following day, then I had to go and was on a lovely podcast called Where Do We Go From Here? Two psychotherapists, and it's a side that you've never seen of me. It's going to be an interesting one. I'm looking forward to coming out myself. I'm looking forward to watching it and seeing what it's like. I can't wait, actually. So I will let you know when that's out. But this podcast, so I didn't know what to do. Obviously, I've done loads of funny ones, and you know, humour is a massive part of my coping mechanism. Well done for life. Do you know, when you've had a lot of hardship, it's like, I find humour is a great way to cope with it. Like, even when my sister was going up to chemo, we used to laugh all the time, like, about stuff. And it just, humour is such a good way to kind of laugh your way through, because laughing is so important. So this podcast, I was thinking, though, it probably won't be as happy, laughy, because I'm going to talk about a really difficult time I had in my life, which was my infertility journey, my IVF journey. My two precious boys are both IVF, and it was just such a difficult time, and I really, really, like, my heart goes out to anybody that's going through it. Look at me emotional. Because it's such a hard time. So you get married. I got married very young, dragged up the aisle, 23. And we kind of decided straight away we were going to try for family. And it just wasn't happening. Every month, like, that period would come and you just break down. And it's so hard to explain it to anyone, you know, if they haven't been through it. And all you look around is you see bumps everywhere. And even friends of yours getting pregnant, you want to be happy for them, but it's so difficult to be happy when all you want is that. So, you know, I only realised when I started trying for baby that I had a condition called endometriosis, which is a condition of the womb where the blood flows upwards and can grow different lesions in the womb. And I think I finally found that out when I came off the pill, and I kind of, you know, was like, Jesus, you know, there's trouble ahead, you know. So obviously that was a massive part of why I couldn't get pregnant. And so I went, I got, obviously met a gynecologist, and we did a couple of different surgeries, but to clear out the womb, to try and give the womb, you know, a bit of a rest. I was put on, it's a forced menopause for 6 months, which nearly drove me cuckoo. I don't know, the hormones, oh my God. He was trying to give my womb a break so the endometriosis wouldn't be able to build back up again. So it's just crap, let's. So come off that, and of course, no, still not happening. So I remember I went in for my last surgery then to get, again, the endometriosis cleared out, the pains were back, and woke up, and the pains I had, screaming, roaring. And everybody was just getting up, and I was just said, there's pain, there's something wrong here somewhere, the screaming. So I remember couldn't get out of the bed, nothing, so they put me on like oxygen. And I was like, what the hell? Like, gynecologist came in to me, and she was like, no, you're fine. And I was like, my oxygen was low, everything. But this lovely nurse came in afterwards, and she's like, have you gone to the toilet? And I said, I feel like I need to go, but I can't. So she put a catheter in, and her bags of blood came out of me. So in the surgery, they had burst my bladder, put a hole in it, which can be a complication of surgeries, and that's why they don't really like doing them. But, you know, the doctor I had was struck off a couple of years later for... She'd done this to a lot of women. So, like, I had to go around, like, with a catheter in for a week, catheter, whatever it's called, the weevy bag that's attached to you. Thankfully, I don't have any long-term issues from that, because still wasn't getting pregnant, though, let's, you know. So went to another gynae then and got Clomid. Was taking that. No luck. I literally was like, I would have done anything for a baby, let's. Absolutely anything. The crying. The absolute nights of crying. Bawling. Inside in that bed, and I didn't want to show my husband. I was crying alone a lot, and Mother's Day come, and you know, all these days that you went to celebrate children, Christmas used to be a desperate time. Christmas Day, I just used to break down, because all I'd want was that little baby, and it wasn't happening. It's so fucking hard. I don't know. Women just, we find it really, I just was kind of hiding it all in private and trying to go to work and trying to, you know, but I was really, really sad. It was a real sad time. But, you know, it took me like, so I was 23 when we got married. So... Yeah, I had my first then when I was 28, so 5 years, lads, of waiting for that baby. And all you want to know, if someone just could just say to you, like, oh, you're going to have a baby now in 5 years, you'd say, grand, I'll relax. But it's the thought that you'll never have them. And there's some people out there that can't ever have them. They won't ever be able to have them. And it's such a shit place to be in, because people are always asking, oh, when you have, the minute you get married, when you're having a baby, they mightn't be able to have a baby. And all the times, like, even if I ate too much chocolate, people say, when you do, and I'm like, I'm not you. But it's such a hidden thing, isn't it? We don't say it. It's like, you know, you don't speak about it, I'm trying and I can't have a baby. No one talks about it. It's like the unspoken. Again, we're just hiding behind it, that we say nothing, we pretend it, that we're not having kids for some other reason, and we don't speak about it enough. I didn't speak about it at all. Obviously, my family knew, my mum knew, and my sisters knew that I couldn't have, you know, I was really struggling having children. But, you know, it was just absolute crap. But yeah, so like after like going to different doctors, trying every alternative medicine you can imagine. Do you know, you do anything. If someone gave me poison lead and said, take that there now and you'll have I would have done anything. Took every supplement under the sun, acupuncture, reflexology, everything. It got to a stage, lads, where I was driving around town. I was like, I wonder, like, what, and ask them, are they keeping their baby? I mean, I've lost the plot, like, completely lost it. So then when, do you know, it was, say, 4 years, they said, okay, you know, you need to go further. You need to go down the IVF route, which is so expensive. So at the time, I think it was 5,000, and that was outside of drugs, like you had to pay for the drugs as well. So I remember saying to my husband, like, I remember putting the car up in Dundee, going, I want selling the car. He's like, what the hell you do? I'm selling the car to fund the IVF. I just want a baby. I said, I don't need a car. That's how desperate it gets you. Do you know? Like, we ended up selling the car, just buying a different car. You know, a less expensive car, but it didn't bother me because I was like, I just do anything for this baby. So in relation to the IVF is, it's such a process. There's so much to it. It's so, you don't realise until you're in it, in a sense, like, you're there and you've all these, you have to inject yourself every day for a few days. I mean, you have to become a nurse overnight. So you're coming home with all these meds and you have to do this injection, that injection. You just have to do it. There's no other option. You're like, I want this baby. So I'll inject all day, do you know? So yeah, you inject yourself. Well, leading up to, you have to do all the bloods and they say do this and do that. And then you have to try and get on the next month's cycle. So you have to ring them when your period comes. And if your period comes on a Sunday, you're freaking out going, Monday comes, you have to be first on the phone to ring on to get into the next spot. And then it's just scans, scans, scans. And these aren't scans in your stomach, girls. These are internal. The all internal scans are not comfortable. But again, you will do anything for that baby. So loads of scans and checking. Then you have to check. So they're checking basically is how many eggs you have. So obviously, you know, I was 28 when I was doing it, or 27. So I mean, I had a lot of eggs. I had 20 eggs for the first one, and you know, which was good. So they're checking the eggs. They're checking the line of the womb. The line of the womb has to be perfect as well. It's, you know, and then even when you go up there and you do all this, the eggs might survive, and then you might have to just forget it and come on the next cycle. There's so much to it. There's so much that can go wrong. You're just on tender hooks the whole time. Would I do it again? Well, I can't do it again, but at the time, I would have done it 10 times to a baby. No problem. No matter how hard it was, I was just still looking at that end goal, the end goal of getting that baby. So I remember going up, you have to get your eggs taken out. So you get your eggs, so you go up legs up there, the whole lot, and they take out your eggs. So at 20 is a lot, like, so they have to go into their little sacks 20 times, like, so. Oh, a bit of pain. Then the husband has to go in and do his bit of business, you know. And I know I say it's hard on the women, like, we have to do all the injections. It's very hard on the men too. It's very hard on them. They're like, you know, they don't talk about it. They don't discuss it with their friends. They don't tell people that they're going through this. So it is very hard on men as well. They feel it as much as us, but you know, remember my husband used to be helping me with the injections, and but you know, once they take the eggs out and then they fertilize them, and then they're in this little oven, and every morning then you get the phone call to say how many have survived the night, you know. And you know, there's different days where you can do the transfer back in, 3 day, 5 days, and you know, every day some die. There's some cases where they all die. Like, it's just, it's such a hard thing, waiting for that phone call in the mornings, you know. So thankfully I had two left, and we were able to go up and do the transfer. Now my husband had to go away from work, so my mother, God rest her, she was above holding my hand while they put the eggs in. And they decide different reasons why you put two in or one. They put two into me anyway, and you know, then you have the long wait. You have a certain amount of days, then you have to wait to do the pregnancy test. And those 2 weeks, you're there every day going, you feel little tweaks, and you just don't know if your period's coming, is the child attaching? Oh, lads. It's a complete and utter mind boggle. Your mind is just crazy. So my heart goes out to anyone going through it. It's such a hard time. Like, I tell my kids all the time, you wear test tubes, you're born the test tube, and they just get a great laugh out of it. And just how precious they were. Like I said, you cost me all this money before I bought a nappy. Cost a lot more now. But yeah, I mean, when you get that positive pregnancy test, it's just like such a relief. I remember I did a pregnancy test then. When I got the first positive, I did a pregnancy test then every day for 2 weeks. That's how fearful you are losing them. You think it's not going to go, it's going to keep, you know. My first pregnancy was, thankfully, it was great. The only thing, mine, they all came early. Like, Callum came a month early, my older boy. He was still massive though. 9'14", like he was very big for a month early, but he was fine. I suppose I was 11'9" when I was born, so my poor mother. There was no C-sections back then, lads. And then you feel, when you have 5,000 spent on IVF, you feel like, God, I have to go private. And, you know, because you feel like, oh, this child is so precious that you want to be watched like a hawk. And monitored and made sure everything's okay. And he was breached, so I got the old C-section. Thank God. Well, I wasn't too posh to push. I was going to push, but the baby just decided to go breech. But the whole well of emotions then when they come. I mean, you know, you say IVF and then you're like, okay, but when they actually arrive, it's... You don't want anybody to touch them. You don't want anyone to be with them. You want to do it all yourself because you've waited so long for this baby. Do you know, you were like, I do feel sorry for, you know, some of my relatives, because they'd be like, they just want to hold it. And I'd be like, no, mine. Do you know, I've tried 5 years for this baby. Like, do you know, I want to... you know, I just want to love it so much. So, yeah, it was a mad time, because I found mother, I did find it very hard, like, because I suppose when you're expecting this baby all the time, and then when it comes to it, babies are very hard work. They take up a lot of your time, and just like, I found it really difficult, because you're like, I wanted you so much, but obviously, you know, our visions of babies are different. My fella just never drank the bottle, puked up the bottle every time he drank it, hated milk. And it was a massive problem for months, you know. And then, like, when he turned 7, we were like, oh, obviously trying all the time, but no pregnancy. And I was like, oh, we'll have to go again, like, the IVF, you know? So I was a bit older then. I was 35, so now granny, they call me. What do they call me? I forget the name of the mother they call you when you're 35 anyway, but geriatric, yeah. Because I think you should be having your babies in your 30s, like 20s. You know, it's not always possible. Like, so obviously the second IVF was harder. I was older. My eggs, I didn't have as many eggs. Medication had to be changed a lot. And, you know, it was a struggle, the second one. Like, it just, when you go up, I suppose, when you got such success in the first one, you know, my egg volume wasn't as high, and they were just getting worried, so we had to do a lot of change in the meds. But we got there, and we got the pregnancy, and it was absolutely amazing. But my pregnancy was way worse with the second. Yeah, I had such trouble with the second pregnancy. I ended up in hospital when I was about 7 weeks pregnant, and could not breathe. And I was like, what the hell? And a clot in my lung, a pulmonary embolism. I need doctors and nurses. And I go, what the hell is she talking about? But that's what it's called. So yeah, I got them in my lung. So obviously, crazy times, lads, because, you know, could have died. And but I'm still here. That pregnancy was very tough. So like, oh Jesus, like, so I'd inject myself every day of that pregnancy, then with a blood thinner to thin out the blood, to get rid of the blood clots. So that was tough because my stomach was just black, because I was to inject myself and sure, I just bruise. So my hair fell out. I couldn't eat. Like, I lost weight in that pregnancy. I was just like two little sticks with this big massive bump walking around the place. I found it really hard to eat. And I was in and out of hospital, constantly scanning me, checking the baby. They bring me in for a rest then because they'd be like, oh, you're just exhausted. And like, I had another child as well, like, you know, my husband still had to go to work, like, and I was working at the time. Obviously, I did have to take a lot of time off in that pregnancy because of the blood clots. You know, it was just such a troublesome pregnancy. But, you know, then, of course, we had to plan the C-section, because you had to plan the C-section around the blood thinner. Because if you take the blood thinner and you do a C-section, then obviously the blood is thin, you could bleed out. So a month before he was due, took my blood thinner as normal, happy days, yeah. Next thing, the pains, the labour pains started. I was like, oh no, this is not what we wanted to happen. But they started. And they started. They were getting worse and worse. And I was like, I'm in labour. The poor guy, he was off for one day off. Nah, had to come in. I've never seen so many people panic. There was just a theatre full of people concerned. Because the blood thinner had been taken and the baby was coming, and it was absolute. It was so worrying. I just kept saying, am I going to die? Am I going to die? And no one would answer me. No one would say, you're not going to die. I was like, is my baby going to stay alive? What's going to happen? And, oh, that's so bloody hard. They opened me up anyway, but the placenta had broken apart. Thankfully, my little Colin was okay. Straight into the incubator, and he was a bit smaller now. He was 7'14". But even for a month early, like, I don't know, what's the story with this month early with them that they want to come out? So yeah, that was just the womb, the placenta, and then they had to go in and they had to try and get all the rest of the placenta out. Oh God, the tears. So it was a tough one. I have pictures of myself actually after having that baby, and Jesus, lads, like a corpse. I was so ill. I was so drained from it. But, you know, I look back now and I'm so grateful that I got through it. I'm grateful that I'm alive and my kids are happy and healthy. And yeah, it's so like, if you know anyone who's going through IVF, struggling with having kids, you know, don't ask them all the time, oh, when you're having the baby. But if they confide in you and tell them, just listen to them and just, you know, it's just about listening to someone and not, oh, it'll happen. It mightn't happen for everyone. And IVF might be an option. IVF might work. It's such an expensive process for people. And, you know, but yeah, I'm here to tell the tale. I've two beautiful, amazing boys that I'm just so grateful to have, and they bring me joy every day, and they also test my patience and test me on every angle. But my house, there's a lot of joy in it, and just so grateful for that. And yeah, that comes to the end of Crazy's podcast. Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? I'm normally not like this, and the podcast I did with the girls is a different story. And so I hope you got something out of this. And I'm definitely going to do, I think, the Agony End podcast. I think that might be a bit of fun for the next one. So if you're on my socials, TikTok or Instagram, I'll put up a box, and if you want to send in a letter or whatever, and I'll go through it, see what I think. So I hope that I'm recording this Easter Sunday, and it'll be out on Easter Monday. Hope your Easter Sunday's gone good. I hope the Easter Bunny popped into your garden and bought way too much chocolate, as he always does in my house. And yeah, thanks for listening. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.